Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. Now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, a man who has just planted a garden like the Obamas, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, babe?
So, where'd you fit that garden on your balcony?
Oof, it was, we got one of those little planters, mm-hmm. and we had 1.5 inches of alfalfa sprouts, and then 2.5 inches of tomato seedlings.
Look at you.
And then 3 inches of brie. But then we found out after the fact that I guess brie is not actually a plant.
Yes. But that would be the favorite part of your garden, I bet.
Oof. But that means the 1.5 pounds of brie we buried in there,
mm-hmm.
probably not likely to really generate returns.
Well, the reason we're blabbing on for so long today is because we don't have as much to cover today.
Nice.
Frankly, because we're going to be a whole minute short. The research minute.
Oh, good lord.
Look, I probably shouldn't have admitted that right up front, because now a lot of people are just going to click off. But you should know that Amber is not here today. She's out on the beat covering a breaking story and could not be with us. Okay, but we do still have some ground to cover. Today we're going to play a part in the gadfly, and we will have Stafford rate that reform.
A new study by Gary Phillips at AIR shows how states and some big cities stack up against countries from overseas, allowing them to internationally benchmark their performance. Does this take away the need for a national test?
Yes. Mike, you can go home, you can go back to your beach, you can pop an iced tea.
We're the answer done, baby. Is no.
Gary Phillips has taken away one of your favorite hobby horses.
So, this is like Margaret Spelling's argument that she's been making about why we don't need national standards. She says, we already have a speedometer, and it says that our schools are going too slow, so why do we need another speedometer? Well, the reason, Madam Secretary, is that it's not just the Secretary of Education that needs a speedometer. Actual parents and kids need to know how they're doing against, a real-life standard, and that's what we don't have today. Because in so many states, it's so easy to be considered proficient on state tests that parents and kids are being told they're doing fine when they're not doing fine.
Mike, didn't I see you on CNN predicting that national standards and national tests are going to yield a culture war? Are you just trying to incite a culture war?
Well, I think
Gary Phillips has given us a functional equivalent, why are you trying to cause trouble?
No, well, we are causing trouble, and we do worry about this common standards effort. It's all happening kind of behind closed doors. We'll have to see what happens when the draft standards come out. And this is tricky, especially when you're talking about reading language arts, high school exit standards. Are they going to talk about literature, poetry? What kind of literature? As I said on CNN, are they going to have a list of dead white males? Is this going to be, are they going to have, if they have no list at all, then that's going to spark some debate about whether or not they've just washed out literature from what our kids are expected to know. So a lot of challenges ahead for the common standards effort, but we still need it because individual kids, parents, schools, school districts need to know how they're doing against an actual rigorous standard. We don't have that in all but maybe 3 or 4 states.
The Stamford, Connecticut school district is moving to dismantle its tracking system in middle school. High-achieving kids complain they are now bored. But an education trust spokeswoman insists that tracking has funneled poor and minority kids into low-level and watered-down courses. Is scrapping tracking the solution to that problem?
This is the same problem. Remember, we used to have the advanced level of the Education Gadfly Show, to try to really challenge the real wonky people out there. And then we switched to this, where it's all mixed up together. And some of our listeners say they're just bored, because we don't use enough jargon.
Not challenging enough. Not sophisticated enough. I mean, this is, the Ed Trust standard talking point, 1A. Oh, my goodness. Disadvantaged kids are being sidetracked. Well, and that's inevitably true. But it's also true that we are paying remarkably little attention to trying to ensure that students who happen to be proficient in reading and math are actually being challenged or are learning things. And it strikes me that we ought to be as concerned about that as we are about the fact that we are inadequately serving kids at the other end of the performance distribution.
That's right. I mean, so if you have a situation where poor minority kids are being asked to just, cut and paste things instead of actually taking academic material, that's a real problem. But the solution is not to just get rid of the advanced courses in a school. I mean, regular courses should be challenging, and then there should also be advanced courses that are even more challenging. By the way, on this topic, a new Center on Education Policy report out this week that claims to show that kids are doing pretty well at the advanced level on state tests under No Child Left Behind. At least they're making progress, too. More progress being made at the proficient level. Yet, I got to say, these state tests, most of them are so easy that the advanced level, that's not saying much.
We just saw a big Wall Street Journal piece, in the last week or so, where Jerry Wiest, and a smart guy, a bright guy, superintendent of Montgomery County, but basically flat out said, you know, my job description is to drive schools in the Montgomery red zone, schools with low achieving populations. The problem is not kids in the green zone. Well, I just think as long as we're defining educational excellence by getting all kids over some relatively low bar of mastery, and that's the job, that we are massively shortchanging kids who come to school already proficient in basic skills.
Yeah, and the question is, are the parents in the green zone, and these are mostly more affluent parents, perhaps mostly white parents, are they going to eventually get sick of this and pull their kids out, look for private options, et cetera?
And I think the last 6 to 8 years suggests that there is increasing dissatisfaction among a lot of these communities with what they see going on.
Okay, topic number three.
A Hebrew language charter school is scheduled to open in New York City next year. Some claim this is a yeshiva in disguise. Jewish day schools are worried about losing kids as they can't compete with free public schools. Is this a promising or worrying development?
So, Rick, you're a person of the book. Could you just say something in Hebrew for us?
Manish Tana, baby. Nice. Manish Tana.
What's that mean?
I can't recall.
But the baby at the end is a nice touch. there's been this debate for a while. There's been a school down in Florida that's a Hebrew language school. Now the first one opening in Brooklyn. So we're really talking about, in the heart of a heavily Jewish community. And the day schools, the yeshivas in New York, are not happy about this trend, that there's going to be these free charter schools offering Hebrew language instruction. They're quite worried that some of the parents are going to opt for this free option.
Well, I mean, it is an interesting question, right? In a situation like a Hebrew themed school which teaches Hebrew language immersion, is there's a lot of overlap there, obviously, with religious instruction. So how does one unpack this? Which part of this is just second language immersion, and how does one separate that out from the notion that this is, you know, at least some part way towards what families would look for in terms of, basic religious instruction? It's kind of a cool question.
But, I think this is on the whole promising. We see this with Catholic schools as well in D.C., the ones that have converted to become charter schools. And the compromise is during the school day, you're going to just do, non-religious instruction. You can do character development, moral development, that sort of thing. But then you can offer before school and after school the religious instruction. Now, what you don't have is that religious instruction kind of embedded throughout the day, which, some people say, look, that means it's no longer a Catholic school. If a kid is disobeying authority and you can't say, hey, you are a child of God and, Jesus would be disappointed with you for doing that, that you're no longer truly a Catholic school.
Although, The way to think about this, though, is we keep thinking about how do we sanitize parochial-style schooling so that it fits under the charter rubric. The other way for us to think about it is why are we going through these intellectual gymnastics to say, well, you can do character-building education. Mm-hmm. You can speak about not disappointing your parents, but heaven forbid we actually speak about disappointing, the Lord. And maybe part of the implication here is that we need to rethink how adamantly we have tried to drive the building blocks of character education out of our conventional definition of public schooling.
It's interesting. I mean, you could say in a public school right now, what would Gandhi do? But you can't say, what would Jesus do?
Mm-hmm.
Those lines are very, very thin. All right, well, a lot to follow. I'm this developing story. And that's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly.
You sound like you're on NPR, one of those tedious people. So much to talk about. Why don't you join us tomorrow?
Yes. All right. Well, as I said before, we have to pass on the research minute today. Maybe we should have a moment of silence for that.
Hey now.
Oh, but Stafford thinks that she's going to. This is her opportunity. This is like.
Steal all Amber's fans.
What was the newspaper? Anchorman movie. That I'm thinking
Ron
about.
Ron Burgundy?
Yeah. When he all of a sudden he couldn't make it for that one show, and then his, the other.
You know what we could do? And in lieu of a research minute, hit him with the research factoid. Mike, drop a factoid.
Okay. Credo study says that charter schools, twice as many ineffective charter schools as effective charter schools.
Boom. You've set a new bar for Amber.
Thank you. Okay. All right. But it is time then for Rate That Reform. Rick, I'm thinking that, my factoid, in my in my urge to be so quick and short and not use any time, I may have actually been inaccurate there. But I will. So I just want to be clear. What the Credo study seemed to indicate was that twice as many charter schools trailed traditional public schools that were similar to them as made stronger gains then. Okay, so Stafford, what reform are we going to rate today?
Well, today we are talking about the disaggregation of data. Sort of. Okay, so No Child Left Behind.
Do we have to say it that way?
Absolutely not. So No Child Left Behind has obviously been often criticized, but it has been lauded for at least one reason, and that is that it disaggregates data into subgroups and thus illuminates the populations who've been traditionally underserved. But what happens when you flip that disaggregation practice on its head? A district outside San Francisco has been doing exactly that. Hoping to boost morale and raise test scores, the Elk Grove Unified District held rallies to rev students up before taking the test. Called Heritage Assemblies, students were asked to choose an assembly designated specifically for their race, be that African American, white, Pacific Islander, Asian, and Latino. The district recently ended the practice after a while.
Whoa, back up. What?
Rick's head is going to spin off his shoulders.
No. They were holding rallies based on race to rev kids up for the state test.
These are race-based rallies.
Wait, a private school, I presume?
Public.
No, public school.
At a district school?
Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And keep in mind that the superintendent who I've met at this district, who is a very good man, nice guy, as far as I can tell, he is on the National Assessment and Governing Board. I mean, this is somebody who is, you know, plugged into national education policy debates.
But I have to say that the district's intentions were pure here. They're merely trying to address the achievement gap. So I can't really fault them
for
the
leadership
problem
in South Africa also had, you know, noble intentions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm getting there, Rick. You're jumping the gun. The fact that Black and Hispanic students tend to score lower on assessments than white and Asian students is a reality, albeit unfortunate. So, but as for execution, you're not going to be surprised to hear me give this one an F. Okay, Rick, are you satisfied now? But I do so with a caveat. So I know what you're thinking. This is so cut and dried. You can't divide student death by race. If not because it's illegal, then because you have a conscience. But to that I respond. The fact of the matter is that the test itself, and No Child Left Behind itself, already breaks these students down by race. So is the district really discriminating per se because they're following the same subgroups that the test already lays out? You may say that the district is simply hoping to solve the achievement gap by acknowledging it more openly. But here we must confront the central question in this case, which is whether or not the relationship between race and achievement is correlative or causal. And these heritage assemblies wrongly imply the latter. So I gave it an F.
So if the president was a student at one of these rallies, which group should he line up with?
Well, the students get to choose based on how they identify themselves.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So I'm politically correct. Let's unpack this some more here, Stafford. So,
sure. So
the theory is what? That let's say we have the African-American rally. There's some evidence that the black kids supposedly know that other black kids have done bad on tests, and so they do worse.
Stereotype threat.
Thank you, stereotype threat. Boom, Stafford. So is this rally in some way to try to get over that stereotype threat, to try to focus on, do they talk about, you know, great leaders in African-American history that have performed at high levels to try to help the kids?
I wish I actually had more information about what was actually going on at these rallies, but my sense is that that's exactly what it was, that it was to sort of, you know, represent your race, do well on the test, kind of boost them up, talk about the achievement gap, and kind of make them think of themselves as a group.
But see, I thought that's exactly what you don't want to do because of stereotype threat, right? Is that you don't want them focused on how black kids usually do poorly, because that would...
And isn't the reason that we have to embrace district schools and preserve them against all odds, even if they're ineffective, is because they're the melting pot? So do we really want to teach kids that they are supposed to approach a state test as a chance to validate people who share their skin color?
Whew. Wow.
Well, no, obviously. But what about some paternalistic charter schools that cater specifically to one race or acknowledge the fact that their pedagogies are geared towards... I mean, what about the schools that are 100% African-American or 100% Latino?
Right.
They kind of operate on the same premise.
So isn't the news, though, that this school district is now no longer going to be doing the race-based rallies?
Yes, it is no longer going to be doing this.
Because people heard about it? Or?
Yes, well, because people woke up one day and had a conscience. Yes, a watchdog group heard about it and sent a strongly worded letter to them.
It could be worse. You know, Congress debated having subgroups broken out by gender. There was going to be a migrant education subgroup at one point. Okay, that is all the time we have. We probably dug ourselves some sort of hole that we should just...
offended lots of people today.
Leave the shovel where it is and sign off. Okay, thank you, Stafford. Till next week, Rick.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net. Signing off.